From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. It's official. Former Vice President and Senator Joe Biden is running for president in 2020. In a video announcement this morning, Biden called the Trump presidency an aberrant moment in time and the upcoming election a battle for the nation's soul. At 9, we'll discuss his candidacy, and then at 9:30, at over $4 per gallon, gas prices in California are the highest in the nation. We'll talk about what's behind the surge in prices and why Governor Newsom is claiming that inappropriate industry practices may play a role. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Former Vice President Joe Biden declared he's running for president in a video announcement just this morning.
The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America, America is at stake. That's why today I'm announcing my candidacy for president of the United States.
And Biden enters a crowded field of Democrats vying to take on President Trump in 2020. In this segment, we're going to talk about his prospects, the issues that are likely to drive his campaign, and the issues that continue to dog him, and how the former senator and vice president could shape the race. Scott Schaefer joins us in studio, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of Political Breakdown, a weekly podcast and radio program. And good morning, Scott.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. We'll also say hi and good morning to Natasha Korecki, who joins us by phone this morning, national correspondent for Politico, who has been covering the 2020 Democratic campaigns. Welcome, Natasha Korecki.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And Scott, let me begin with you. Well, this is a guy who's ahead in the polls. He is the front runner. And the video seemed to say, well, we can't be an America which talks like President Trump talked to Charlottesville. We have to really move forward and maybe in some ways move back. That is, move back to Obama-Biden.
Yeah, he sort of refers to the Trump presidency as something that will be an anomaly, something that history will look back on as somewhat abnormal. Unless, of course, Trump is reelected. And I think he sees himself as a person who can restore sort of decency and be the protector of the Obama legacy in some ways. He is very familiar, as you say. He's leading in the polls, which is not necessarily a good place to be. I mean, history is littered with front runners who ended up not getting the nomination. That said, Joe Biden does have a lot of strengths. Fundraising, not necessarily one of them. And he's got a lot of competition from much younger Democrats who think that perhaps voters are looking for a fresh face, somebody like anybody from Kamala Harris to Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. So there's a lot of competition, and this is going to be a marathon, Michael. It's not a sprint, which is probably good at the age of 76. You know, he's gonna have some time to kind of get into it. He's run twice before, and he hasn't been a great candidate. So we'll see how he does this.
Just thinking about that, I was looking at the amount of money that he raised, and we'll talk about that when he ran against President Obama at about $100 million in his treasury, and Joe Biden had about $8 million. But this is already a fascinating campaign in many ways because it started with, naturally, a tweet from President Trump just this morning. He called him Sleepy Joe. He's got a name for him already and talked about his crazy ideas. I suppose that will give him a bit of a push because a lot of people see him clearly and ought to see him as the anti-Trump. But let's talk first about the campaign because it's already underway. He's not going to Iowa first. He's going to Pennsylvania to a union hall.
Well, and that's where he's from. He's, you know, from Scranton. He's sort of the average Joe, if you will. I think somebody who is very comfortable speaking to a union, group of union members, firefighters. He's very close with them, for example. But he's also has deep relationships here in California with organized labor, with members of the Democratic Party. And although they may not say it publicly, people like Joe Schumer, maybe Nancy Pelosi, see in Joe Biden somebody who can restore in the White House, somebody who understands the way government works and is supposed to work.
Forgive me, hasn't Senator Feinstein already pretty much given him her imprimatur?
She did in sort of an impromptu comment back in January. She was asked and she said that she would support him if he got in, that she liked his experience. They, of course, served for a long time together on the Judiciary Committee. She and Barbara Boxer were elected after the year of the woman, so to speak. After the Clarence Thomas hearings. And so, yeah, you can see that people who have served with him, whether it's Dianne Feinstein, Chuck Schumer, and many, many others, have a lot of affection for Joe Biden. And whether they do so publicly or not, are probably pulling for him to get the nomination.
He's got, and let me go to you on this, Natasha. He's got a pretty limited digital footprint at this point, and people are saying a lot depends on what he, as far as raising money on the first 24 hours. But there really is a big challenge here, a big mountain here in terms of getting the kind of funding that he needs. And it's probably going to come more from traditional sources and big donors, which will make him even more of a target from the left flank and the younger generation.
Right. It's almost as if he's the exact opposite of Elizabeth Warren, who, you know, swore off, you know, courting big donors and, you know, having these private calls with them and private fundraisers. It's like he's doing almost the opposite here, and that's who he's targeting. And you know, as we reported last night, you know, Biden sounded the alarm on fundraising, and he, you know, in two different fundraising calls with donors, he said, like, the first 24 hours is what everyone looks at, and, you know, I don't have, you know, he's acknowledged in the past, he does not have this small dollar fundraising online network, these massive lists that Bernie Sanders, you know, Beto O'Rourke, Warren, Kamala Harris, and now even Pete Buttigieg is, you know, are really making a killing on those. He doesn't have those. So he was sounding the alarm saying, you know, we're going to be judged by what we can do in the first 24 hours, the first week. You know,
Bernie Sanders has already raised $26.6 million. I mean, that speaks volumes, it seems to me, at this point, doesn't it?
Well, right. I think there was one report that said if Biden raised $100,000 every day between now and December, he would only match what Sanders has already raised in the first quarter.
Well, it's going to be a tough road for him, much more than people may realize. And a lot of that has to do, Scott, with the baggage he carries. I mean, not only are we talking about the sense that the African-American community has that there was an old bill that will be brought up, of course, that wound up with a lot of blacks imprisoned as a result, but Glass-Steagall being essentially flushed down because of Joe Biden, one argues, and, of course, Anita Hill. And that's come up repeatedly, not only that he, although he said he was wrong and everything, didn't apologize to her personally. But you spoke to former Senator Boxer about this.
I did. I spoke with her yesterday. And, you know, they, of course, have had many conversations over the years about the Clarence Thomas hearings. And I asked, you know, her, like, would she defend him, number one, if criticized over that? And she said that, you know, she felt that he took those hearings as far as he could, given where the rest of the committee was on both sides of the aisle. And she added this.
It's practically impossible for a chairman to get out ahead of his committee. And I believe since that was the very first time in my memory that sexual harassment in the workplace had ever been discussed in all its ugliness, that there was a lot of unease on the committee on both sides. They were pushing him hard, and I think he took it as far as he could.
And, Michael, she went on to say that what was important is that what he did afterwards, adding Dianne Feinstein and Carol Moseley Braun to that committee, and also being a champion for women over the years. Now, she was careful to say she wasn't endorsing Joe Biden, but clearly she has a lot of fondness for him and, you know, is happy to see him in the race.
Well, Natasha Gorecki, you had a column called Is He a Friendly Uncle or a Creepy Grandpa? And you talked locally to Susie Tompkins Buell, who, again, from that demographic of women that we're talking about here, speaks very fondly and very affectionately about him. And he was never charged with anything sexually transgressive, but there was a recent poll that said that 67% of women don't seem to care about this.
That's right. The polls are on the former vice president's side. And, you know, we also wrote about the fact, well, I think it was in that story, we wrote about the fact of the generational difference in the perception of that touching. I mean, in fact, in that story, Buell says to us, I hope he doesn't stop. Yeah, I welcome it. It was something inherent to who Biden was. You know, the other thing to kind of add in here when we talk about his age and we talk about him moving, you know, is he with the party now? I mean, where is the primary electorate? And when you look at the primary electorate on the Democratic side, you know, they tend to be older, they tend to be more white, and they tend to be more Biden voters. So that does benefit him right now. I mean, obviously, you know, as you say, when you're this high up at the beginning, and the only place you may have to go is down. But in the end, there are a lot of baby boomer type age Democratic primary voters who are going to be pro Biden.
Well, let me bring our listeners into this. You may have some thoughts, you may have some feelings, you may have some concerns or some excitement about Joe Biden being now officially in the race, and you also may have some questions. Or if any of those fit the bill, feel free to call us now. Our toll-free number is available to you. The number to call, 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program, so please feel free to join us. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls. You can also join us right now by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting any questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And he's got to get the labor vote here. And Scott, what are his prospects there? I mean, to some extent, all those states that Hillary Clinton didn't visit and all those working class people that didn't want to vote for her because of enmity or whatever else, they love Trump. He's got to swing it the other way. And I was reading Paul Waldman in the Washington Post, and he was saying he's also got to give them, as well as many other people, a reason to vote for him.
He does. And, you know, one thing about campaigning in places like Iowa, New Hampshire, even South Carolina, less so California, is that it is retail. It's retail politics. And Joe Biden, over the years, has shown that he has this real ability to connect with people in a visceral, sometimes physical way, which we talked about a moment ago. But overall, there's a sense that he, both through his personal experience, the tragedies he's gone through, the death of his wife and a young daughter, as well as his more recently his
son. Incredible personal story.
Yeah, and I think that resonates with a lot of people. He can speak the language of working class people, you know, firefighters, cops, nurses, teachers, and that will benefit him. You know, that said, you know, I think here in California, I spoke yesterday with somebody from the California Labor Federation, and I think what you're seeing, not just with labor, but with big donors generally, is they're holding back a little bit. They're not all ready to stand up and pick one person. They're kind of seeing how this unfolds. They're spreading their money around in terms of donors, and they're waiting to see where the consensus is, and they don't feel any particular hurry to get behind one candidate, whether it's Biden or anybody else, at this early, what they see as this early stage.
And we always have to remember that it's a long way to the nomination, and things have turned out to be very surprising through the years. Who would have thought Barack Obama? Who would have thought Donald Trump?
Yeah, and a lot of it is catching fire at the right time. You know, Joe Biden, as we've said, along with Bernie Sanders, are at the top of most polls. Now, whether that's just name identification and familiarity, kind of a parking place for voters before they see the rest of the field and get a chance to kick the tires and see how they perform in the debates, you know, we'll wait. That's what we'll see. Is this going to be, you know, sort of the peak of Joe Biden's campaign today, the day he announces, or is he going to build on the support and the sort of the affinity a lot of people have for him?
I want to go to our callers and bring our listeners into this, but Natasha Kurecki, let me just go back to you for a moment. Natasha, again, is national correspondent with Politico. There is a real generation gap here. I mean, a lot of the younger voters are drawn to, for example, Scott mentioned Pete Buttigieg. He's half the age of Joe Biden, and we can say the same about Beto O'Rourke. There are a lot of young candidates here, and they're, well, shall we say, more to the left. Of course, so is Bernie Sanders. But your thoughts about the generation gap?
Well, there's definitely a lot of excitement behind them, and what remains to be seen is it a flash in the pan, is it sustainable? Because as we all saw in this race already, everyone sort of had their moment. Kamala Harris with a big rally, you know, Elizabeth Warren was first, and she was getting a lot of buzz, and then Beto O'Rourke, there was Beto mania, and of course Bernie Sanders. But then Buttigieg comes out. I was in Iowa a few weeks ago. There's supposed to be 50 people to show up to the Buttigieg rally. 1,650 people ended up turning out. There's a huge excitement about him, and now you're seeing some of the Beto O'Rourke support shifting to Buttigieg. The other thing I'm seeing is with donors and with bundlers. A lot of the old Obama bundlers who are in I'm based in the Chicago area, if you talk to them, they're going to Buttigieg. He's not that far. He's in South Bend. He's been making a good impression in Chicago, a meeting here. He has an office here. So there is a lot of excitement there, and that's something that could carry them through. Now, if the party is very divided, if it's a Bernie Sanders and there's a lot of, you know, never Bernie, stop Bernie, Democratic faction, that's when you might see more people going over to Biden if they feel like it's going to be an either-or sort of situation.
Well, there was indeed a good deal of outrage about Beto O'Rourke being on the cover of Vanity Fair rather than Pete Buttigieg, and he is certainly getting a lot of attention. I want to read a couple of comments coming in that are going after Uncle Joe. Let me just read them, and then I'll go to your calls. A listener writes, Joe Biden is not an average Joe. He's a status quo Joe, trying to pander to white working guys with a rich white guy who won't work. All Americans want real economic changes, not useless race politics. And yes, I still believe Anita Hill. Here's Jesse, who writes, Joe Biden is a hypocrite, full stop. He can go rally labor unions in the morning, then hit up a corporate fundraiser in the afternoon, raking in cash from the same ownership he decried earlier that day. He's so far behind on funding at this point, he will no doubt have to resort to super PACs. I don't trust Uncle Joe. Want to say anything, Scott? We got a lot of callers waiting.
I'm waiting for the perfect candidate to come out because they all have baggage, they all have strengths, they all have hurdles, and we just heard what one listener thinks are Joe Biden's liabilities, but they all have liabilities and strengths, and that's what campaigns are for.
Here's the first caller, and that's you, Sam. You're on the air. Good morning, Sam. Are you there?
How is he going to? Yeah, this is Sam. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Yes, so my question is, how is he going to get the black vote because of the crime bill? As when in 2007 he said that that was his biggest accomplishment, and also in support for Iraq War. How is he going to get around to voters and answer those questions around those?
I think Sam has just identified two of the biggest pieces of baggage that Joe Biden has. And the real question about black voters is, will they go to him because he's, again, branding himself as the Obama-Biden? President Obama has not offered an endorsement, but they're still very close, and it's almost forthcoming and likely that it'll come down the line. The real question is, can he rally those voters? Hillary couldn't necessarily do it the way that Obama did.
Hillary and Biden are two very different people. I think, Hillary Clinton had her own personal problems with the crime bill and statements she made when Bill Clinton was president. And I think there were people who felt that if Joe Biden had run in 2016, I think Joe Biden feels this, that he might have had a better chance of connecting not just with African-Americans, but working class voters and others who abandoned Hillary Clinton either for Trump or just didn't bother to vote. I think one thing we haven't talked about is the intense desire of Democrats to win in 2020. And part of what the calculation will be, I think, during the primary process is which of these candidates can best beat Donald Trump. Now, there's all that sort of a head kind of decision. There's also the heart, and which of these candidates really tugs at your heartstrings. We'll see if Joe Biden's able to do that in a way that, say Beto O'Rourke, he's going to be in San Francisco this weekend out at the Irish Cultural Center. There are younger, fresher faces, so to speak, who are engendering a lot of enthusiasm. Will that happen for Joe Biden, who's been around for, so many years? We'll see. But as Sam said, he has a lot of things in his history, including being on the wrong side of things like the Iraq War that he'll have to answer for.
Yeah. Let me thank Sam for that call and go right to another caller. And that's Kevin. Morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Thank you. Okay.
I don't support Biden necessarily. I kind of like some other candidates more. But my main concern is in 2016, the Democrats put forth an establishment candidate who was polling around 5 or 8 points higher than Trump. And we saw one of the biggest political upsets in modern history. And that's just a concern that if we put forth Joe Biden as a nominee, something like that might happen again.
All right. I thank you for weighing in. Appreciate hearing from you, Kevin. We're going to go right to another caller, and that's Kim in Kansas City. Kim, you're on the air with us. Welcome.
Hi. Well, I got to tell you, I'm a middle-aged lesbian out here visiting, and very strong feminist politics, and I love Joe Biden. He can kiss the back of my head anytime. And I was looking at all the comments about him being overly affectionate. I come from an overly affectionate Midwestern family myself. And I'm wondering, well, why don't you just show the pictures of him holding hands with Obama and rag on them about that?
Okay.
My suggestion is that Mr. Biden pick a black woman, Kamala Harris. I love Stacey Adams. As running mate, I think they'd be unstoppable. And Kamala Harris, if she can put up with being vice president, be perfect.
Okay, thank you for that.
I think, Michael, of course, if he does get the nomination, the vice presidency will be unusually valuable, given that he'll be 78 years old when he's.
But it never runs as a high factor, through the years.
Saying whoever is the vice president, if he were to win, stands a pretty good chance at the very least of being the front runner in 2024.
I read a few more comments. Lori writes, although it's still very early, I'm tending to support Biden for president as a moderate and unifier for the country who can win the Midwest. Add a younger, more progressive person for VP. Listener tweets, we need a president who will save this country. I'm impressed with most of the Democratic candidates, but there's a reason Biden is out in front right now. He has been in politics for decades. We know what he can do. Biden with a female VP, Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, sounds good to me. And already we're getting the running mates here suggestions. Let me get another caller on. And that's you, Carrie. You're on.
Hi, I like Joe Biden, but I'm concerned about his position on net neutrality and what that'll mean to getting the support of younger voters.
Well, we're back to the younger voters issue and net neutrality. You see that playing in here, Natasha Kareki?
Wow. I feel like maybe it's more of an obscure issue, but I don't know that I'm the expert on that. I will say one thing that he has been at the forefront of, and that is on this whole notion of disinformation warfare on social media. And if you want to talk about a major issue that is going to confront every 2020 candidate, that is one of them. And before he even entered the race, Biden, I think so far, is the only 2020 candidate to come out and say, and I'm not just talking about hacked, you know, we won't use hacked materials. He's saying, you know, we should have some kind of non-aggression agreement among us so we are not using bots and attacking each other in a clandestine way over social media, which, as we learned in 2016, was a really palpable way to motivate, you know, sort of base voters. So he did come out on that. And as far as the youth vote, I think that might be something that.
Again, Natasha Kareki is national correspondent for Politico. I want to read another comment from a listener. It says, it's absurd to look back on a 50-year history in government, people, ideas. The country has changed remarkably in 50 years. Let's look forward and let's look at experience. These young candidates have none. Ageism has no place in this discussion. I wouldn't say they have none, but let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Joe. You're on. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am going to ask about or talk about the Obama-Biden connection. I think, you know, Barack Obama proved that he was the best president we've seen in the 21st century. And I think Biden would carry on the same way. And I think of Joe, because I'm Joe too, but I think of him as Uncle Grandpa Joe. And, you know, he's avuncular and he's paternal at the same time in a good sort of way. And I think he's going to win the hearts of everyone. I'll take any response off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we need a future crystal ball or tea leaves to talk about winning the hearts of everyone. But I'm just struck by something. We're coming to the end of the segment, Scott, that keeps sitting in my consciousness here. And that is right now the front runners are all white men. You got three white men. You got a lot of women, very impressive women in this race, and women of color and so forth. But
yeah, and I think, you know, there are people who are saying, look, women, especially women of color, have been the driving force behind the Democrats' success in the midterm elections. And if we're going to win in 2020, they say that Democrats need to have at least on the ticket, but maybe even as the nominee for president, someone who's going to motivate those folks to get out and vote and work for the candidate.
We'll continue to watch. Biden's in, and thank you, Scott Schaefer, and thank you, Natasha Kareki. And when we return, we're going to definitely shift gears here. You can shift gears in your automobile, too, because we're going to talk about gas prices. They're higher than they've been in 5 years. I'm Michael Krasny.